Patricia Elaine Action, Patty or Patsy to those who knew her best, was a 25-year-old from Clearwater, Florida. She and her husband had recently split up, and she was eager to start her life over in the city where she was raised. On May 26, 1978, she went to a local Ramada Inn lounge with some new co-workers. After a few minutes there, she got up to use the restroom. She was never seen again. I'm Ed Densel, and this is Unfound. Recently, in a few discussions I've had with some listeners and people who work with me on this program, the statistic of 40% has come up. That's the percentage of cases on Unfound where drugs can in some way be connected to the disappearance. It's a large, but I don't think surprising number. And truthfully, I've only just recently started putting together a chart of Unfound's cases, breaking them down by a variety of different criteria: gender, ethnicity, location, drug involvement, relationship status, etc. It's one more way for me to better understand the nature of disappearances and pass my findings on to you. Well, there's another statistic Unfound has gathered. 30%. That's the percentage of disappearances where the people are here 1 second and gone the next. No suspects, no leads, no suspicious behavior, no addictions. No connection to any criminal element at all. What are some of these cases? Jason Jolkowski, Joshua Guimond, Regina Marie Boss, Shane Fell, Craig Freer, to name just a few. 30%, where it seems the entire world blinked its eyes at the same time, and when we opened them again a split second later, these people were gone, like some kind of magic trick. Patty Action is one of those victims. How can a young woman get up from a bar, go to a restroom, and just disappear? It just doesn't seem possible. But it happened. And now a summary of the case. This is brought to you by my friend Megan Good's site, charlieproject.org. Patty had moved in with her parents 6 weeks before her disappearance, after Patty and her husband had split up, with him moving back to Ohio. After moving back in, Patty got a job at the Kapok Tree Inn where she met Mike Swearingen, a guy she went out with a few times before her disappearance. On May 26, 1978, Patty had just gotten her paycheck. It was a Friday and she and some of her co-workers went to the Ramada Inn Lounge to hang out. Once they arrived, Patty ordered a drink, but after taking just a few sips of it, she got up to allegedly use the restroom. She was never seen again, her car disappearing with her. 4 days later, her vehicle, a 1969 Chevy Chevelle, was located in a Days Inn parking lot in Tarpon Springs, north on Route 19 from the Ramada Inn. There was a large amount of type O blood on the passenger seat to indicate someone had sustained a serious, if not fatal, injury. Patty's blood type was type O, although the police have never determined it was actually hers. Her shoes were also inside the car. From early on in the investigation, Mike Swearingen was a person of interest in Patty's disappearance. However, Mike seemingly had a solid alibi, him being on the way back from Miami on the night of May 26th. During the preparation for this episode, Unfound discovered that within a 3-year span of 1978 to 1981, three other women with Patty's physical characteristics disappeared in the Tampa area, two of them also having their cars taken and placed elsewhere, with one of them even having her car found across the street from the Ramada Inn Patty disappeared from. Those cases are also unsolved, but Unfound is working under the premise right now that Patty, along with the other three women, were victims of a serial killer. The guest for this episode is Diane Rice, Patty's sister. Unfound news. Nope, I can't make the big announcement yet. I'm thinking I'll be able to make it during the next episode on December 1st. For now, I have to let everything play out on its own time. But trust me, I continue to be through the roof about it. Next, have you seen the Unfound playing cards? They're now available at www.makeplayingcards.com. The 52 cards have the faces of the victims in the 52 cases Unfound has covered since it started in September of 2016. The cards also have the names, disappearance locations, disappearance dates, and the phone numbers for each of the case's police departments. I'll be giving some away to guests, and I'm hoping you, the listeners, purchase some to help spread the word about these victims. Finally, I need to thank Angela for her gracious donation on Patreon this week. Thank you, Angela. Unfound has a brand new tier system on Patreon that I hope you all check out. You can get in for only $2 a month at patreon.com/unfoundpodcast. Where you can find Unfound. Unfound is on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, iTunes, Podomatic, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Podbean, and Overcast. You can email the program at unfoundpodcast@gmail.com. The website, unfoundpodcast.com. Please check out the secret Stephen Kocher episode. Amazon.com, volume 1 in both ebook and print form. And please mention Unfound on all true crime Facebook pages and other websites and forums. Thank you. I'm very happy to have on this episode of Unfound the sister of Patty Action, Diane Action Rice. Diane, welcome to Unfound.
Thank you.
Tell the listeners a little bit about your sister, Patty. First of all, was she older or younger sister, and what are some childhood memories you have of her?
All right. Well, Patsy was my older sister by about 2.5 years. I have a younger brother, Bill, who's almost 2 years younger than me. And, you know, even as a kid, she was pretty responsible. I mean, she used to babysit for my brother and me. She used to, you know, we loved to swim, water ski. She could play the piano and, you know, just be active kids. We played outside a lot, kickball, dodgeball. She did have asthma and allergies, though, so she had to be careful of what she was around. You know, as time went in high school, we became close friends. She was always there if I needed something, you know, if I had a problem or just, you know, needed a friend. She was really talented. She could listen to a song on the radio and then figure out how to play that on her flute. She also played the organ at our Sunday church services. She was smart. She would take honors classes in high school. And I used to hate to get the same teachers as she had because they would always expect me to get A's like she did. She was a majorette and taught me how to twirl the baton. She was very popular. She was on the high school homecoming court. She was the Key Club sweetheart. She was in Latin Club, and she was in the high school band.
That must have been a hard act to follow, Diane.
It was. Like I say, I used to hate when my teachers, when her teachers would say, "Oh, you're Patsy's sister." I'd be like, "Oh, no." You know?
Uh-huh. And this was all in the Tampa area, the Clearwater area you grew up?
Tarpon Springs. We grew up in Tarpon Springs.
Okay. And, yep. And of course, the listeners probably already know that I live in Madeira Beach, although I'm not from the area. So Tarpon Springs and Clearwater are not far from me at all. And what a great place to grow up, though. You know, 1970s Florida, it's not as crowded as it was now, right?
Not at all. Tarpon Springs, it was, you know, like pretty much nothing. And even Clearwater, it wasn't much to do. We used to have to go to St. Peter, Tampa, you know, to do anything, go to concerts or whatever, you know, stuff like that, because there was pretty much nothing around then.
Did you go to the beach a lot?
Yeah, we went to the beach all the time. I remember one of her habits was when she was nervous, she would like bite her lower lip. So sometimes there would be pictures that she would be, you know, we'd be taking and she'd be biting her lower lip because she'd be nervous, you know, just little things like that.
Okay. And what's maybe a favorite childhood memory? Did you go on a vacation, maybe go to, of course, Disney World isn't very far away. Did you ever go there, or, you know, something like that? What image do you have of her when you think of her now?
Well, we used to go to Daytona Beach like every summer for vacation. And I remember just being at the beach and playing in the waves and, you know, just laughing and having a good time. You know, we had a really a good childhood. I mean, we used to go water skiing every Saturday because my dad had a boat. We used to go roller skating every Friday night with a church group. And, you know, and then Sundays, we would always have a Sunday dinner. We'd go to church and then have a Sunday dinner. And, you know, I remember all those times just, you know, kind of like family, just being together. You know, back then we didn't, I guess we grew up kind of naive because we didn't think of any, you know, bad things happening. We never even locked our doors before my sister disappeared. It was just, you know, easier kind of time back then, at least it seemed like it.
Different time than
now. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and if people don't know, this is all in Pinellas County, where St. Petersburg, Florida, and Clearwater, Florida is, and technically Tampa is across the bay in Hillsborough County. But this area has really grown up in the last, you know, since the 1970s for sure, and I've read about that. So she did well in high school. She was on the homecoming court. She played the flute. Did she go to college?
She did. She went to Stetson College in DeLand, Florida. She was working towards being a teacher, but she actually never finished college. She got married to Bill Woodyard, and they lived in DeLand.
How did you feel about that? How did your family feel about that? She went to school, maybe didn't finish. Did she meet him? Was he a student there as well?
You know, I'm not sure how they met, but I don't think he was a student there. But I know my parents weren't real thrilled after spending all the money, you know, for college that she didn't finish. Yeah. But, you know, she got married and they seemed to be, you know, that's what she wanted. So, you know, my parents supported her in that.
Did they make a cute couple, in your opinion?
They did. I mean, I thought that they, you know, made a good couple. She went out with him, and then I went out with his brother. So it was two sisters and two brothers at the time.
That's interesting. Okay. and what year, what month and year did they get married, and how long were they married?
Oh, let's see. Now you're making me think of times, which I am so bad at time. I know they weren't married that long. It was probably only a year or so. And so they must have gotten married. Let's see. She disappeared in 78. So they probably got married, I think, around 76, maybe 77.
Okay,
right in that time period. Because they weren't married, but like maybe a year.
And she was very young. And I'm going to guess that he was somewhere around her age. So they were both very young, early 20s.
Right, just a year or two older, I think he was.
And so what did she do? She, like you said, she didn't graduate. Did she get a job while she was married? What did she do over there in DeLand?
She was a waitress. She was a waitress while she was married. You know, and then, like I say, they were only married for a year or so when he left, and he had just left her a note saying that marriage wasn't for him and had taken off. So she was devastated. I mean, she had no idea that was going to happen, and she wound up moving back in with my parents in Tarpon Springs at that time.
That had to be devastating for her. I didn't really surprise.
It was. She was really surprised and really, really upset.
Any insight into that? Did he seem like the kind of guy that would just, I mean, I've seen pictures of her. I've, of course, on our prior conversation, sister sounds like a wonderful, wonderful person. You know,
yeah.
She seems like she'd be a good choice for a lot of men.
Yeah, well, I thought so, but, you know, I guess they didn't get along all the time, and I know they would argue. I don't really know why the marriage broke up or why he felt that way. You know, I guess she had a temper like anybody else, but I don't really know all the details of that.
Okay. So where did he, so he left or just left the note, and where did he go? Where did he leave and go back?
He went back to where he was from in Ohio.
So he left, and she's left here, and then she moved back to the Clearwater area.
Right, she moved back to Tarpon Springs in my parents' house temporarily.
So let's move up to maybe the days, weeks, and months before she disappeared. She moves back here, and does she get a job, maybe thinking about going back to school? I'm guessing you were seeing a little bit more of her than what was going on in her life after her separation and from her husband.
Well, she was working as a waitress at the Kapok Tree in Clearwater. She was looking for an apartment to move into because she wanted to get on with her life after the divorce. Now, she had a partner. They worked in teams at the Kapok Tree named Mike Swearingen, and she wanted to kind of separate herself from him because she said he was real possessive because they'd gone out a couple of times, but he acted like they were a couple. So she kind of wanted to, you know, get away from that. She wanted to get out on her own and just kind of, you know, pick up the pieces and go on.
What does that exactly mean? Maybe I've never worked in the restaurant business, and I'm going to guess a lot of listeners haven't. What does that mean they worked as partners at the Kapok Tree? What does that mean?
Well, I guess every table had like two people that would wait on them. And it was her and Mike were the two, you know, that had partnered up to wait different tables.
Okay. That's unique to me. I don't know how often that's done at restaurants or not, but that's how they ended up meeting, working together. And then when she would be at work, if he was there, they'd work certain tables together.
Correct.
Okay. Great. Did you meet Mike? I mean, how many, maybe I should ask you this. Once she moved back to Clearwater, Tarpon Springs area, how often did you see Patty?
I saw her at least a few times a week. I mean, sometimes she would come and spend the night at my apartment. I lived by myself at that time in Largo. You know, I was working for an attorney downtown St. Petersburg. So I was on my own. You know, I was out and on my own. And she would come over to my apartment and spend the night sometimes. But I'd usually see her at least a few times a week.
And, of course, this is the late 1970s, so there's no cell phones or anything like that. Maybe you talk on the phone, but most of the talking those days was done in person.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Any fears that she was expressing at the time? Any concerns? Like you said, maybe this Mike guy was coming on a little too strong. Any, besides him, though, anything else going on in her life that maybe you worried about?
No, not really. Just, you know, it was the thing with him and just her trying to find an apartment and, you know, working. And she pretty much worked and went home. I mean, there wasn't a whole bunch going on right at that point in her life. She had moved back, so she didn't know a lot of people again because she'd been away. So, you know, she was trying to make friends and things like that.
Now, this is an issue we're going to bring up, but we don't know if it's a factor into her disappearance or not, but it's something that pops up once in a while on the cases that Unfound covers, that Patty might have been bipolar. Can you tell the listeners about that? Did you know that before she disappeared, or is that something you didn't discover till afterwards, and does it surprise you?
Well, I didn't know that. Now, apparently she had just gotten on medication for that. I never noticed any signs of her being bipolar, and neither had my brother, because I talked with him about it, and neither one of us had any idea or had noticed anything like that. But apparently she had just gotten on medication for that.
Yeah. And the times you talked, you were not even aware that she'd even gone to a doctor and gotten medication before her disappearance. That was something that never came up. Between
that never came up. Now, I remember her saying she would lose her temper and stuff, and I would blame it on her husband. I'd say, well, you know, relationships can make you crazy. Sometimes it makes me feel crazy, you know, so I kind of blew it off for that. You know, I didn't think anything about her just, you know, out of nowhere being bipolar.
So we move up to that day, May 26th, 1978, the day that we believe she disappeared. What was going on that day for you? What was her schedule that day? What can you tell the listeners about that day?
Well, that was a Friday, and my mom's birthday was the day before that. And she went to work, and I remember she called my mom to let her know she would be home a little late. Because, living with your parents, you gotta, check in if you're gonna be 5 minutes late, because they'll worry. So she let him know that she was gonna go out for a drink with friends from work. At that time, like I say, I had my own place in Largo, and I had spent the weekend with a friend in St. Petersburg, so I wasn't home. Apparently, she had called me and left a message on my answering machine, but I wasn't, like I say, I wasn't there. We had no cell phones then, so that was all she tried to do was, get a hold of me that way. Then apparently, she rode by my brother's house, who was always home because he had a 2-year-old. But this one night, he had gone out. So she left a note on the door saying that she'd stop by, but no one was home. So she was going to go have a drink with coworkers from work at the Ramada Inn, and that she would stop back by after that. But then she never came back by, and nobody ever saw her again.
Okay, and we're going to get into the specifics of that for us in a second. To your knowledge, had she ever gone to this Ramada Inn, and how close was she with these coworkers? Because, as we stated before, she hadn't worked with them that long at the Kapok Tree. She'd only been back in the Tarpon Springs area for not a long time. What about that?
Well, she was not really close to any of them. She worked with them, and like I say, she was trying to make new friends. So I think that's why she had decided to go there, and have a drink with them. And so she went to the Ramada Inn. It's on 60 and Highway 19. And she sat down, ordered a drink, took a couple sips, asked where the bathroom was, and nobody ever saw her again. Now, if she had decided to go somewhere and knew she wouldn't be going home, to mom and dad's, she would have called back to either me or my brother and said, "Look, I'm not going to go home tonight. Just cover for me with mom and dad," something like that. But we never heard back from her either.
And to your knowledge, at least since she came back from the DeLand area, she had never gone missing before, maybe just out of communication for a couple days, nothing like that.
Never. Like I say, even if we were going to be 10 minutes late, it was like, we better call,
Better call.
that kind of thing.
Okay. In that, had you personally ever been in the Ramada Inn before? And
No.
I think the building is still there, but I don't think it's a Ramada Inn anymore, almost 40 years later, but I think the building is still there. It's probably a different hotel chain now. But were the restrooms close to the front door? Would she have been headed toward the exit slash entrance of the establishment and going to the restroom?
Well, I
Anything
have
about that?
never been there personally, but from what I understand, the restrooms were towards the front, from what I've been told.
And did these coworkers, and I'm guessing it was a mixture of men and women,
Correct.
did any of them go look for her? Did any of them go out to the parking lot and see if her car was there? Did they do anything when she did not return after, let's give her 10 to 15 minutes?
No, not to my knowledge. They didn't call the police. They didn't call her house. They didn't, as far as I know, they didn't even look for her.
So her half-finished glass of whatever she was drinking, wine or whatever, is sitting there, and she kind of disappears, and they don't do anything.
Right.
You ever have a chance to meet any of these coworkers, talk to them, ask them any questions after this happened back then,
Nope.
or your brother or your parents?
Nope, I don't think any of us ever. I know the police questioned them. And I remember at one time them using the phrase they were unable or unwilling to give information. So I don't know. It was kind of, to me, it sounded kind of suspect, but that was all we got out of that.
That's what the police told you? What do you think about that?
I don't know, because there's been so many theories over the years. I mean, in the beginning, we thought we knew, we had put it in a little box that it was Mike, and then it changed to maybe it was this other guy, and then it was like maybe somebody from the K-pop tree, and then it was like maybe a serial killer. I mean, it's been so many things over the years that I don't have any idea what to think anymore.
Now, not only was she missing from that night, but her car went missing as well. So, seemingly after she left the bar, she left and her car left with her. It wasn't like she was picked up or anything. But when did you find out that something was wrong, that she had disappeared? When did your parents find out? When did your brother find out? What did you do like the next day? I guess it would have been Saturday. When did you know something wasn't right?
Okay, well, my parents, of course, my mom was waiting for her to come home that night, and she never came home. And so the next morning, they had called, and I wasn't home because I had spent the weekend with my friend in St. Pete, and my brother hadn't heard back from her. And so they called the police immediately, but they were told that they had to wait. I think it was 72 hours before she could be a real missing person because she was an adult. And my parents tried to tell them something had happened because she would never do that. My parents called friends, anyone that they knew that they could think of that might know where she could be. And so I didn't know myself until I called home on Sunday and my parents said, "Come home." And I was like, "Why? What happened?" And they wouldn't tell me what happened on the phone. They just said, "Come home, come home." And, I found out later they were relieved to hear from me because since they weren't able to reach me on Saturday either, they thought maybe someone had gotten both of us. And so when I did get home, I couldn't imagine what could be so terrible that they couldn't tell me on the phone. And, the worst thing I could think of was, oh, maybe our dog got hit by a car. Because, like I say, we were raised kind of naive as far as the world being a bad place. And then when I got home and got the news, I was totally shocked.
They said that, and they told you got up there, and they said that Patty went out on Friday night with some coworkers, and she never came home, and her car was missing as well. When you were and your family were trying to contact anybody, any friends, coworkers, regarding Patty's disappearance, if they had seen her, was Mike Swearingen one of those people that you thought about contacting?
Well, we didn't really think about contacting him. And like I say, it was such a nightmare all at one time. And I mean, it was just so shocking and unbelievable that what happened was Mike wound up coming to my parents' house. Now, she had told him, because she said, I want to get rid of Mike. He thinks that we're a couple and we're not. And I told her, I said, well, just tell him to get lost. And she said, well, I'm afraid of what he might do. And I said, what's he going to do? You live at home, you go to work, you go to work, go home, blah, blah, blah. That's all you do. What's he going to do? And she said, okay, well, I guess you're right. So the Wednesday before she disappeared on Friday, she had come over to my house and said, I told him to get lost. And, we celebrated. All right, you got rid of him, blah, blah, blah. And so he had taken off to Miami. I don't know why he went to Miami, but that was the story, is that he went to Miami. Well, Saturday, he shows up at my parents' house and says, is Patsy here? And my parents were like, what? And just kind of broke down. And he said, oh, don't worry. I know where she is. I saw her. I saw a guy driving her car with her in it. I'll go and bring her home. Don't worry about it. She'll be fine. And then he left. And so later, I know the police questioned him for 2 weeks. And he had told him about three dreams he had of killing a girl and gave exact locations in Tarpon Springs where he buried her. And the police checked out those places, but they didn't find anything. And then after 2 weeks, he took off up north, I think it was, but he left the state. And, you know, then they started changing who it might have been and blah, blah, blah. So
you're telling me that the day after Patty disappeared, Mike, who was allegedly in Miami for a few days, stops in at your parents' house and says that he saw Patty with another guy in her car.
Right.
And had he ever been to your parents' house before, to your knowledge?
I think he had been there. I'm not sure. I mean, he might have picked her up there or something. Like I say, they'd gone out a couple of times.
And he said that he knew where he would be able to find Patty, but he never showed up at your parents' house again. And obviously, he never did find Patty because her case is still unsolved almost 40 years later.
Right.
After the 72-hour period, what did the police do?
Well, supposedly they had put a bolo out for her car, and they had told my parents to go looking for it in like parking lots and stuff like that. Well, my mom was having seizures. I mean, she was just, you know, beside herself. She couldn't do it. And, you know, both my parents were like devastated. So my neighbor across the street said she would ride around. And so she was riding up and down, I guess, you know, looking in the different parking lots through Tarpon Springs. And she was going down the highway and saw the car backed in at the Days Inn on Klosterman and Highway 19. And the only reason she recognized it, because my sister's car had a dent on the driver's side. So when it was backed in, the dent was towards the road. So she went and looked at the tag and saw it was hers. And then she called the police. And then the police, you know, said, don't let anybody touch the car. And she called her husband and my dad. And they went out and guarded the car till the cops got there.
And this was how many days after? 4 days after Patty disappeared?
Right. This was 4 days after that she found the car.
And how far is the Days Inn building, hotel, motel, from the Ramada Inn?
It's about 15 miles.
15 miles.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So before the police get there, your dad and was it this woman's husband
who yes.
showed up to protect the car, I guess, until the police got there. Right. What did your father see when he got to the car?
Well, apparently her shoes were in the car and there was blood. And my dad said it looked like someone had tried to wipe the blood off of the passenger seat and the floorboard. But when the passenger door was opened, he said it was just caked with blood. He said there was so much blood in it that he didn't hold out any hope of her being alive. And he said he was actually afraid her body was going to be in the trunk when they opened it. But it wasn't.
Did it look like the trunk had been used at all, or was the blood just in the passenger seat?
The blood was just in the passenger seat and on the floorboard.
Okay. Was it unlocked? Do you remember? Were her keys ever found? But her shoes were inside. I'm guessing, are we sure that those are the shoes that she was wearing that night, or did she keep like pairs of shoes in her car?
No, I'm pretty sure they were the shoes she was wearing.
And was the, although they didn't couldn't do DNA back in the late 70s, was the blood type that in the car the blood type that Patty had?
Yes, it was the same type.
Okay. So you find the car, there's blood inside, it does not look very good. And I'm sorry, did you say that the car was unlocked or locked? Did they have to break into it or?
I'm thinking it was unlocked because my dad didn't say anything about them breaking in. He was just saying that it was interesting to watch how thorough they could search something without touching anything.
So the car is found, and at this point, obviously you and your family had to be really
afraid at this time? Seeing.
Yes.
Okay. Did the police say anything to you? What did they continue to do after the car was found? I'm guessing they towed it away, but what happened to the car? And did the police offer any theories as to what might have happened to Patty?
Well, they did take the car. They somehow figured out where she drove. And they said by the stuff that was in the tire treads, it looked like she'd gone somewhere like that had some gravel. And I think that's why they thought she was killed in a park on the very north end of Lake Tarpon. It's off of Keystone Road. And for some reason, they think, you know, I didn't find this out at the time, but later I found out that I think that's where they think she was killed and then transported. But initially, they were saying, you know, Mike was the suspect.
Let's talk about Mike a little bit. She met him through work at the K-Pop Tree. And what are your memories of Mike? I know you were around him a little bit, but just his personality and what kind of guy did you think he was?
Well, he struck me as a real show off. I mean, he flirted with everybody. He wasn't a big guy, but he seemed to crave attention. Like one day Patsy and I were following in my car and he was on his motorcycle, and like every bump he went over, he would exaggerate and bounce up and down and look back and make sure we were watching and, you know, stuff like that. So it was kind of like he liked to show off. And I know after this happened, I actually moved from my apartment in Largo because he'd been there before and I was afraid he might come after me.
So at the time, you, I guess, and your family were thinking that it's a good possibility that he had something to do with Patty's disappearance.
Right. Okay. At that time, that's exactly what we thought.
And just to be clear, he was not part of this group of Patty and her coworkers who went to the Ramada Inn on that Friday. He was not part of that group.
No, he was not.
Okay. And what is his alibi? As far as you can remember, what he said or what the police found out, what is his alibi for the night that Patty disappeared?
Well, like I say, he had gone down to Miami. Now, I know it had to be after Monday because that's when Patsy told me that she told him to get lost. I don't know how long he'd been down there, but the alibi for that night is that he was hitchhiking home from Miami. And I believe the police interviewed some guy that had picked him up and given him a ride, and his alibi apparently went through about 5 a.m. Now, Patsy was last seen around midnight or so. So between midnight and 5, I'm not sure what happened, but that his alibi apparently went through about 5 a.m. when the guy said he dropped him off back this way.
Any reason that, to your knowledge, did Mike say why he went to Miami and back, maybe leaving on Tuesday and then coming back, I guess, Saturday, late or early Saturday morning or something like that? Any idea why he went to Miami?
I don't know. If I did know, I don't remember now.
I'm guessing the police probably asked them that, but maybe they didn't tell you. We just don't know. And nobody needs to get out a map, but Tampa and Clearwater are nowhere near Miami. That's like a 5-hour drive or something like that. And of course, you're hitchhiking. It's going to be even longer than that because you're going to be standing along the road for quite a bit of time. Did he not own a car? I guess he had a motorcycle, but
that I know of, he just had the motorcycle.
Okay. And so he's a little bit of a show-off. Patty wanted to get away from him a couple days before she goes missing, but nobody saw Mike around the Ramada Inn that night. Was any of his fingerprints or anything found in the car?
Yes. But he'd been in her car, so it wasn't, they were saying that wasn't unusual because he'd been in the car before. So if they were fresh or not, I don't know. I don't know if they can tell that from fingerprints. But yeah, his fingerprints were apparently all over the car.
And after Patty disappeared, did you keep in touch with Mike? I'm not saying on the phone or anything, but did you keep tabs on him? And did he have any problems with the law, let's say, after Patty disappeared?
Nope. I had asked the police, I guess, you know, like I say, they had him in there for 2 weeks afterwards, just questioning him from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., but they didn't arrest him because they didn't have a body. So after a couple weeks, he just took off. And I know one of the detectives had told us, you know, off the record, if we find her body, we'll arrest him tomorrow. But then, like I say, later in the years, the theory changed. So I'm not sure why or whatever. But as far as I know, and they said they went to him. Now, he's since died. And the detective on the case now said that they went to him on his deathbed and said, look, you know, you're dying. Let us know. Did you do this? And he still denied it.
Did he have any problems with the law? Did he ever?
They said he had never been in trouble since then. Now, there was one thing that was suspicious, having to do with the military. I remember they said something about he'd falsified papers. Now, I don't know if that means to get in or get out, but he had a medical discharge from the military, and we didn't know if it was physical or mental.
So that could be anything. Maybe it's something that popped up during the military, or he wanted to get in, or maybe he tried not to get in and falsified something. We just don't know. What year did he die? Is this recently or years ago?
I think it was at least 10 years ago. I'm not sure exactly when, but it's been a while.
So he was a guy in Patty's life, but since then, no other women, to your knowledge, disappeared because they knew him, and to your knowledge, never had a criminal record after that.
Right. Now, maybe it wasn't quite that long, because I remember the detective that took over and came and contacted us in 2011 is the one that said they went to him on his deathbed. So maybe it was sometime after that. I really don't know when he died, but yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the, maybe I should ask you this. Any of those people since 1978, when she disappeared, any of those people who were with her that night, with Patty that night, have they ever gotten contact with you?
Never.
Did any of them vouch for Mike, or any, I'm guessing the police tracked them down, say anything about, any of them say anything bad about Mike, once again, you know, to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge. I really don't know. I just know that they checked each one out and, you know, talked to each one. And that was it. That, you know, they had said they were not that helpful.
It's kind of suspicious.
Yeah, it made me think so.
Let's move on to this. The ex-husband. Remind the listeners, once he and Patty got divorced, where did he go?
He moved back to his hometown in Ohio.
And is there anything, any possibility that maybe he had something to do with Patty's disappearance? I mean, how did their divorce go? Anything like that?
Well, I wouldn't say it was bitter, but it wasn't like amicable. It wasn't like they talked about it and decided to get divorced. You know, he just decided it was over. I know the police went and checked him out and said, you know, ruled him out as a suspect. He never contacted me or anything. I never spoke with him after that. Now, the only thing now is I'm waiting to hear from the cold case detectives about bones that were found on a property in Central Florida. And we're not sure if there's a relationship between him and this property, but the last name is the same. They both have the last name Woodyard, so I'm not sure if that has anything to do with it, and they're checking those out right now.
And so this is kind of new information. There were bones discovered on some property in Central Florida. How long ago did that happen?
Well, they were discovered in 2000.
Oh.
Now, they didn't take our DNA till I believe it was 2004. And if the DNA had been done on the bones, there would have been a hit. But apparently, there's so many DNA things to be run that they may or may not have done DNA on the bones. So that's what I'm trying to find out right now.
And it's
there's
just
a detective on the case.
And the people who own that piece of land happen to have the same last name as Patty's ex-husband.
Correct.
Did he ever call you or contact your family to offer his condolences? Did anybody even let him know that Patty disappeared?
Other than the police, I don't think so. And I don't remember him calling the house. But I'm sure my parents wouldn't have been real nice anyway if he did, because they were getting divorced. But I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't remember that he had called or anything.
Okay. In putting this episode together, and because I live in the area, and I've actually, maybe the listeners don't know this, but I've told Diane this. I have a collection of all the disappearances that have happened in the Tampa area over the last 50 years. I printed out an entire stack of files that I have that sits on my desk all the time. And so Patty's disappearance was fairly familiar to me, although I've learned a lot about it since talking to you, Diane. But you were not aware there were at least three other disappearances that kind of are similar to Patty's. You were not familiar with that until I told you about that.
Correct.
Okay. And probably the one that is most similar is the disappearance of Barbara Barkley in 1981. And in fact, she disappeared along with her car.
Mm-hmm.
And what did we discover?
Her car was found right across the street from where Patsy went missing. And I know both of them were 5'4", and they both had long hair. And it was almost the same date, but 3 years later.
That's kind of creepy, isn't it?
It is.
Okay. So her car was found across the street from where Patty disappeared. And there's actually a sketch of a guy who might have something to do with Barbara's disappearance. And you should know that Barbara's disappearance is still unsolved, and I would hope maybe some time to talk to her family as well. You've seen this sketch. Does it look anything like Mike Swearingen?
Well, it was just such a generic sketch that I couldn't really tell.
I agree. The sketch is, it could be anybody. It could be me.
I would have been only
11 in Pennsylvania at the time. It could even be me. I agree, but was Mike clean shaven? Did he have short hair? Do you remember how he looked back in 1978?
Yeah, he was clean shaven. He had, I wouldn't say short like in today's terms where, you know, it's buzzed. It wasn't short like that, but it wasn't a long hair style. It was kind of an in-between style.
And Barbara was disappeared from her family's business, which is a furniture store. I think I did the map on it. I think it was about 7 miles from where Patty disappeared, something like that. It was not far.
Mm-hmm.
We also have another case, Sharon Harrer. I think that's how you pronounce the last name, Harrer. She disappeared the year after Patty disappeared, and she disappeared right in my town here of Madeira Beach, right up the street. She looks a lot like Patty, doesn't she? Very similar build, everything.
Well, yeah, she was exactly the same height and weight as Patsy, and they both had blonde hair and light eyes. Sharon had blue eyes, and Patsy had hazel eyes. So they both were blonde hair, light eyes, exact same height and weight. Patsy was 5'4 and weighed 98 pounds. And so did she.
Yeah, very tiny women.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have one more, and there's a similarity to this one as well. Leanne Huffman, she disappeared in the exact same year that Patty disappeared. And her car, just like Patty's, was found, although it was over in Tampa, her car was found outside a hotel, just like Patty's car was found outside of a hotel.
Uh-huh. And she went missing 10 days after Patty, and they both had blonde hair and hazel eyes.
Do you think there's a reason to think that maybe all these disappearances are connected? I happen to believe so. And I'll go on the record believing that at least two of them, the cases, might be connected to Patty's. But you as a Tampa resident, you've lived here all of your life. You didn't even know about these disappearances. And you know, of course, about disappearance cases because your sister is a disappearance case.
Right. Right. Yeah, I didn't know about those.
What you knew about Patty, and what, now that you know about these cases, and I know you've read through them, is there any chance that Patty could have known any of these women casually, maybe ran into them somewhere, maybe even friends with one of them? Any ideas?
Not that I know of. I mean, I don't think so, because, like I say, she was away at school and had just been back a few months, you know. I'd say less than 6 months had she been back here when it happened.
And I know you didn't know Mike very well. Any possibility that Mike might have known any of these women? You know, did he have any other work, to your knowledge, besides working at the Kapok tree?
That's all I know of, and I would have no idea if he knew them or not.
Okay. I can tell the listeners this is something that I'm going to look into very seriously. And I've given my word to Diane that I'm going to try to do everything I can to try to equate Patty's disappearance with any of these women, because I think that it's a very, very good lead. And frankly, I don't even know if the Clearwater Police Department or the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office or anybody working there now knows anything about these cases and how they all might be related. So I'm going to do my best to let them know. What's it been like since 1978, Diane, after this happened?
Well, it has pretty much, it was and has been and is a nightmare of the worst kind. You know, like I said, that was like something that I couldn't even comprehend might happen, you know, in our family. That's one of those things where people always think, oh, it'll never happen to me. Well, I did think that, you know. My parents got divorced 3 years after this. They both eventually remarried, and they both since died. My brother, he lives outside of Gainesville, and he's been up there for years. And, you know, I know for the first year, I literally would, you know, and at that time I was 22. So I was going out, you know, having a good time. And I would literally go out and think, okay, tonight I'm going to be good. And I would just start talking about it and wind up crying so that I couldn't even catch my breath. And I think I did that for a year straight. And then I decided I wasn't going to cry anymore. That was it. I wouldn't let myself cry anymore after that, because I told myself, you know, get over it, which I'm still not over it. But at the time I thought I should be, and I should just deal with it and move on. And that wound up actually putting me in the hospital from not letting my emotions out, because I, you know, wouldn't let myself feel. So now, and it's taken years and years to give myself permission to feel again and to go through it, you know. But I still have dreams and I have nightmares about it and about Patsy. Sometimes they're good dreams where we're just doing stuff. Sometimes there'll be dreams where she's back and all of a sudden I remember, wait a minute, you were missing. And then I would think, you know, I would feel like bad, like I should be happy that she's back, but I would be mad because she was gone for so long and made us think she was missing. I mean, it's just been horrible. You know, and then I'd wake up and feel bad that I felt like that. And, you know, so I don't know. It's just been something that never goes away. I mean, I think of her all the time. I could hear a song and think, oh my God, she played the flute to that. You know, I can see something on TV and all of a sudden I'm there, you know, and it just comes over me like a wave, you know, of emotion. And it's hard to explain to anyone that hasn't been through it, you know, just like anything is, how you can just be fine laughing, you know, you can be laughing about something and then all of a sudden something like that happens and you find yourself in tears, you know. It's just been a roller coaster of emotions, and it's hard, the not knowing who, where, why, how, you know, any answers to anything, you know, like when my dad said, I was afraid she was going to be in the trunk, and we're like, oh yeah, thank God she wasn't, you know, maybe it would have been better if she was. Maybe they'd have found more stuff out. I mean, I don't know. And, you know, I've even said to my friends, you know, if somebody says, get in the car or I'm going to shoot, I'm going to tell them you're going to shoot me now because they're going to find me. You know, it's just been, it's been a roller coaster. It's been a nightmare. And I know my whole family feels the same way.
How did your parents, maybe I should put it this way, your parents got divorced 3 years after Patty disappeared. Do you think that her disappearing was a factor in that?
It's hard to say, but I know that they handled it very differently. You know, like years later, my dad would have like a bunch of pictures around of her, but my mom found it too painful to have a lot of pictures around. So I know they handled it in very different ways, but I don't know the details of why, you know, they got divorced.
Did your parents ever express a belief to you of what they believe happened to Patty?
Well, I think we all thought in the beginning it was Mike. I mean, you know, and I think that was part of what, you know, eventually put me in the hospital, is we had all put it in a neat little package. It was him, you know, so you kind of set your mind, this is what happened. And then 3 years later, they were finding bodies up in Brooksville under a house. And people would come to me and at work and say, they said your sister's name on the news. Did you see it? Did you see it? And I was like, no, I didn't see it. And then I would find myself crying and say, no, you're not going to cry anymore. And then that's what, you know, I wound up getting paranasal sinusitis and being in the hospital for a week. And the doctor said I was literally within 8 hours of death had I not gone into the hospital. But it's because I wouldn't let myself feel, because I thought, no, we've already done this. We've already figured it out. Don't bring something new in, you know. And then that was new. And then it would be another scenario. Over the years, it's been scenario after scenario. And every time something new comes up, it's like it brings you right back to that first day. You know, it's like, oh my God, it's like the nightmare just starts all over again.
And you had said though at one point that the police started to shift away from Mike and thinking something else. Have any reasons why that happened? And did your parents say anything about that? Being that they're not here today to, you know, to speak about this.
Right. Well, I don't know what they felt, you know, after that, but they had at one time shifted it to some guy she'd gone out with in high school, which I never accepted that as a scenario. You know, then they were saying maybe it was a stranger, you know, and then the bodies in Brooksville, and, you know, it was just one thing after another, you know, it would just change. So like every time I talked to a detective, it would be like, well, now we're thinking maybe this, and I'd be like, oh no. another scenario. So I don't know. And at this point, it's just like, now I'm totally confused and totally lost as to who it could have been.
And like you said before, the not knowing is the worst part.
It is. It really is.
When was the last time you spoke to a detective about Patty's disappearance?
Actually, I spoke to him on the phone just a couple weeks ago about the bones that have been found in Deltona, which is not far from DeLand, which is not far from where she lived before she moved back here. And he's looking into finding out if the DNA has been done.
Okay. Do you have a Facebook page or anything like that regarding Patty? A lot of the information, of course, is on charlieproject.org. Megan Good, who is a friend of mine, runs that site. But anything else where people can find Patty online?
Well, I just know if you Google her name, it comes up. I've done that in the past, and there's things, you know, that come up under her name.
Okay. All right, and I hope the listeners will do that. And I, of course, being that I am a Tampa resident, this disappearance happened not too far from where I live, and the listeners should know that although Diane and I have not met in person, she is also a Tampa resident living over in Hillsborough County now. I'm going to continue to work on this case, especially because I think it's connected to these other disappearances, and also because it happened right here in this community where I live now. Any last words, Diane? Mm-hmm.
No, I just thank you so much for, you know, bringing the case to light again. I really appreciate that. It makes me feel good to know that she hasn't been forgotten, because I certainly never will.
You're welcome, Diane. I hope we can meet in person sometime. I think I would really enjoy that. And I thank you for being on this episode of Unfound.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And that was my interview with Diane Rice, sister of Patty Action. I thank her for appearing on the program. I also spoke to Patty's brother, Bill. He was also helpful to me in understanding what was going on in Patty's life at the time. Like the disappearance of Kelly Rothwell, who disappeared no more than 5 miles from where I do this program, Patty's disappearance feels very personal to me, since it's also a location I pass quite often. If you're going fast enough on Route 19 in Blink, well, you'll miss the exit where Patty vanished. That brings me back to those three other disappearances that happened in this area. Barbara Barkley, May 28th, 1981 in Pinellas Park, about 2 miles from where my brother lives. Her car being found across the street from where Patty disappeared, in a hotel parking lot. Sharon Herrer, November 26th, 1979, Madeira Beach, Florida, less than a mile from where I sit right at this second. She was 5'4 and 98 pounds, the exact same build as Patty. And she was a waitress, just like Patty. Leanne Huffman, June 5th, 1978, Tampa, Florida. Yes, 10 days after Patty disappeared. Her car was found in a hotel parking lot just like Patty's. It's very, very curious. But there's even more. And I hope this shows why I think that these four young women were made to disappear by the same person or persons. While even doing even deeper studying after interviewing Diane, I discovered two other clusters of disappearances in the Tampa area. Retha Hires, Danielle Johnson, and Margaret Dash. All black women who disappeared between 1974 and 1989. It's a 15-year span. They all had romantic interludes with a guy, Cleveland Hill, with him being the obvious suspect. He's still walking around free, by the way. So three women who disappeared all connected to the same man. There's another cluster. Bradley Williams, Jason Galehouse, Barry Block, David Rhodes, James Shoemaker, and Mark Thompson. They were all gay men who disappeared in the Tampa area between the mid-90s and early 2000s. Their disappearances were eventually pinned on Stephen Lorenzo and Scott Schweikert. Those two are both in jail for murders where the bodies of gay men were found. I think what this shows is that when you have a cluster of disappearances amongst people of similar demographics, the odds are fairly high that those disappearances were committed by the same person or persons. Thus, I think it's reasonable to proceed with the idea that with Patty, Leanne, Barbara, and Sharon, that their cases are related as well. So the question is this: did Mike Swearingen know all of these women? I'd like to find out by searching for any members of Leanne's, Barbara's, or Sharon's family. If Mike didn't know these other women, then we have to figure out the connection between all four of them, because I surely believe one exists. And I'm very sure the police in this area don't even know about the similarities of all of their disappearances. I'm going to continue to look into this angle of a possible serial killer in the Tampa area at the time, and I'll let you know if anything happens. With that, I'll leave the theorizing up to you. Do you think the disappearances of Patty Action, Leanne Huffman, Barbara Barkley, and Sharon Herer are related? And that's the program. If you found it informative, please go to the app that you use to listen to Unfound and give Unfound a 5-star review. I thank you for listening. I'm Ed Densel, and you've been listening to Unfound. Thank you.